This show is brought to you by Nedbank Business Banking. Wouldn't you rather have a bank that puts the expert back into expertise? Search Nedbank Bigger Picture Business Banking.
Welcome to Business Watch. Well, we're talking about gaming today, and Microsoft's audacious $69 billion move on games publisher Activision Blizzard has detonated a bomb under the games industry, along with the proposed deal share size. The prospect of a tech giant worth more than $2 trillion making a grab for games industry leadership has prompted breathless speculation about whether it's going to precipitate a wider industry realignment. Games like Activision's Call of Duty now attract hundreds of millions of players between them. According to some, the deal announced last week will greatly add to forces that have already been reshaping the sector in recent years, including the streaming of games, leading to the creation of ever larger gaming empires. And the huge size of today's gaming audience, which already dwarfs other forms of mass market entertainment, is playing really to the strengths of companies that can build and manage giant online businesses to spread their costs. That's according to Bing Gordon, a longtime video game executive and venture capitalist. Well, to talk about what this means for the gaming industry and the future of the market here in Africa, I'm joined now by Petri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenia Capital, Jay Shapiro, CEO of Usiku Games, who's building a gaming for good movement across Africa, and Saleho Tatsi, co-manager of Anchor's Global Tech Fund. Petri, Activision, it was founded back in 1979 by some disillusioned employees of Atari. I think those who can remember that far back are real gamers who were making the company millions but were denied any pay rises by the company's CEO, the notorious Ray Kasser. And as an aside, it certainly shows what can happen if you don't recognize and reward your top talent. But why is Microsoft paying what is R1 trillion and some change for this gaming company when it already has Xbox?
Well, I think it's an interesting move. I think, you know, the Microsoft CEO was sort of quoted in saying that gaming is probably the most exciting category of entertainment today. So that includes, movies, music, and everything else. Gaming is potentially a bigger industry than all of that. And I think it's a huge audience that you get access to. And, you know, the world is busy changing. The capabilities of computers and the games that we could play are significantly better. A lot of the stuff is sort of moving into the VR space as well. And I think it's a very interesting and fast-growing market. I think that the majority of us still sort of underestimate how many people are actually spending their evenings playing video games. And, you know, if you can capture that market, you have potentially, you know, 1 billion customers.
How big is the gaming market today? It was certainly a far distance from the Atari days when your mother would have said you'll amount to nothing playing all of these video games well into the evening. It's a massive market. Just how big is it?
Recording stopped.
It's surprisingly big. It's $150 billion. And to put that into perspective, it's second only behind pay TV in terms of subsectors within entertainment. It's bigger than music, home box office, or home videos and box office. If you put all three of those together, it's bigger than all three of those. So it's really a huge market, and it's growing very quickly, as Petri said earlier.
I've seen figures of about 2.7 billion. Jay, just to bring you in, would you say that's accurate? And just share with us your career so far, which started developing Web 1.0 and then Web 2.0 is the largest digital agency in the world. You're now in Kenya doing all of this gaming for good stuff. Just share a little bit more about your journey in the gaming space.
Yeah, so I'm old enough to have grown up playing those Activision games on Atari. So I remember them. I remember them well. The industry has moved on substantially from then, and I think the Activision deal that you were just asking about, you know, this was a great time to do it. It's a real value-based proposition at the moment because of some of the troubles that the company has had. Microsoft was able to pick them up at half the price of what their stock was 6 months ago. So in fact, it was a really good deal. In a space across the globe, you know, mobile gaming in particular is really important. That's something that Microsoft has not been strong on. And Activision owned King. They bought King Games a few years ago, which gets them Candy Crush and all of those games. And so this was a huge acquisition for Microsoft. We're talking about $200 billion globally forecasted this year. We're up to 2.7 billion players of mobile games. And so, yeah, it's a huge deal, and the industry is moving on very rapidly.
And I mean, if you look at that 2.7 billion people, I'm sure that's going to grow as we see smartphone penetration in Africa, Jay, increase. And I guess for a broad audience, need to really distinguish here between the various game categories, because I think often we think games, we think, oh, consoles or PC, and therefore it doesn't really have relevance in Africa. But mobile must be one of the fastest growing categories out there.
Yeah, most people think of games in terms of gamers with a capital G, as you said, PC games and consoles. But to put it in context, the most recent Xbox console, the X and the S, have sold a total or shipped a total of 12 million units globally. And then to put that in context, in 2019, the last year we have statistics, in Africa, we had 350 million connected smartphones. And PwC forecasts that that's going to be 680 million by 2026. So it just dwarfs it. Mobile is absolutely where it's at in the industry, and Africa is a mobile-first continent.
Now, Petri, going back to the Activision-Microsoft deal, before we talk more broadly about how investors get access to this fast-growing theme, I think one of the big questions clearly is what is going to happen now, and will Activision become exclusive to Xbox? Because that's really what they built their reputation on, as being almost open source. Microsoft likes to keep everything in its ecosystem.
Well, Microsoft has also been making a number of different moves in recent times. So, for example, the Xbox Game Pass subscription, in rands, it's about 150 rand a month, which gives you access to play any number of titles listed on the Xbox Game Pass store. So essentially what happens is, you want to go out and buy a game. It might cost 1,000 Rand, 1,600 Rand in some cases. You can now get access to all the latest games that are coming out for Xbox as well as PC, multi-platform, cross-platform compatibility. So I can play on my Xbox while someone else plays on their computer. And on that Game Pass platform, there is, there are a very large variety of different games already available. So the Activision Blizzard games that will be rolled into Microsoft now, I think will probably be accessible by the subscription service being the Microsoft X Pass or Xbox Pass. So it does sort of make sense, and this is a direction that a lot of people are going into. So the next iteration of something like the Game Pass is doing the sort of cloud gaming, where a server is potentially doing all the processing of the actual game itself, and you can then use any interface to play with that game or to play that game, whether that is a cell phone or a console or even just a controller that you plug into a smart TV with an internet connection, right? So that is, I think, where we're going in the longer term. In the short term, though, it does give you access to all the Activision Blizzard games, some of which you may have to purchase, some of which are free to play. But you can now access those, well, not yet, but in time, I'm sure you'll be able to access those through the Xbox Game Pass subscription. So that broadens the audience or the potential audience that the Activision Blizzard games, could get to. Also, I think from something that's really big in the gaming industry is the community that plays the games, right? There are usually a large number of fans, I guess you can call them, of certain franchises. Like if you take the Diablo franchise, for example, Blizzard misstepped. Or Activision Blizzard missed it hugely when they did a sort of a revealer trailer and a teaser at BlizzCon, which is something that people look forward to a huge amount every year, for a new Diablo game that was going to come out. And then they said they were going to launch a mobile game, a Diablo mobile game. And the gaming community was deeply, deeply, deeply disappointed by that. So yes, mobile gaming is obviously the fastest growing category, but I think that these companies are finding success on the base of a huge and very, very passionate fan base for the games. If you take a game like StarCraft, for example, just the reaction from that community, now there's only about 2.5 million people that are currently playing StarCraft. I mean, it's a 12-year-old game. But those 2.5 million people are deeply, deeply, deeply passionate and are now all brimming with excitement that, well, maybe they're going to get new patches. They might see a third version of the game, a StarCraft 3 potentially. So there's all this hypothesis around what could potentially come. And I think that, if you look at games in isolation, you can't just look at the actual game and the value that it brings. Because, for example, you might only sell the game once, but people are still playing it 12 years later and building esports communities and all sorts around that. So what I think is going to be, I guess, the best move that Microsoft can make in this space is to really heavily invest into the esports scene. We're seeing bigger companies, or, you know, not bigger than Microsoft, but big companies like, you know, Red Bull, Mercedes, all these sort of top brands are starting to do sponsorship and endorsement deals in the professional gaming sort of industry, or the esports scene, if you will. So if Microsoft can continue to support esports, particularly in some of their more iconic brands like, you know, Warcraft, StarCraft, obviously Call of Duty and those types of things are very popular, but they're not the games that built the brand. They're not the games that built the communities, right? So I think that if Microsoft does, you know, support the esports scene for those iconic sort of brands, if you will, or the iconic games, then I think, you know, we're in for a really good couple of years for at least for those communities. And that, I think, is where a lot of the value lies.
Jay, where do you see the value lying here? Because obviously there is the underlying community that are very passionate about the games that they play, or is it in being able to scale and get out onto those mobile platforms and potentially alienate some of those diehard gamers who really are hooked on a PC or console?
Yeah, I mean, think about it in the Netflix context, for example. You know, Netflix has a great website, some good marketing, a nice payment transaction subscription system, but it doesn't mean anything if they don't have the content in the movies. Content is the lifeblood of this, and really that's why I think these deals make so much sense for somebody like Microsoft, because it's all about controlling that flow of content, that constant flow of new games coming out that are going to keep people excited, and frankly, that are locally relevant in the international markets where the big game players have to start looking. That's why we think Africa is so important. The US and North America as a whole was sort of in the doldrums even before COVID hit, growing at 2% per year. Europe, median age is 47, it's aging out. We have Africa at a median age of 19, 20 years old, with the fastest growing middle class. It's all about these international markets, and that's where the focus is. And in order to do that, they have to have relevant content. And that's, I think, the driver of all of this.
Maybe we need to dial it back a little bit, Salejo, and talk about the gaming business model here. I mean, where's the revenue primarily generated? You know, where's that sweet spot? Is it from in-game purchases like Fortnite, where you've got to buy skins? Is it from subscriptions to games? How are companies actually maximizing their revenue generation ability in these games?
Yeah, sure. So if you look at last year, PC games plus console games plus esports combined revenue was about half of what mobile is. So mobile is really the big driver for that revenue. 9 out of the 10 top grossing mobile games on the iTunes market last year were free to play games. That means the revenue came from either advertising or from in-app purchases. And as we start seeing the rise of blockchain gaming, that's going to become even more important as people start buying items within their games that they can then own and potentially transfer to other games.
Salejo?
Yes, Michael. So I think one of the, for traditional publishers like Activision, free-to-play has been something of a challenge for them. So the rise of titles like Fortnite, but they have adapted with their own versions of mobile versions of Call of Duty, for example. I think what's quite attractive from an investment standpoint about the gaming industry is that it's increasingly become a digital business. So, for example, if you look at Activision, for the first 9 months of 2021, their digital revenue was about 89% of total revenue. And obviously, that's a much higher margin business than your physical business. And so you've seen that with their margins. Their margins have gone from about 30% at the start of the last decade to roughly 39% for the first 9 months of 2021. So you do have a business which is becoming increasingly digital, increasingly higher margin, which is very attractive.
Yeah, and scalable on the back of that. PHE, when we look at losers from this deal, the initial stock price of Sony tended to indicate that the market believed this could be bad for Sony, bad for the PlayStation. It's recovered since then. Who do you see as the potential losers out of this acquisition?
Well, to some extent, you know, Microsoft does lose a little bit. As we know, you know, Activision Blizzard have been struggling with some issues within their company, lots of, you know, lots of sort of sexual harassment stuff. And that is, you know, there's been a very, very toxic culture within that business for the last 2 or 3 years. And in that process, they've lost a lot of their key and lead developers. So again, sort of rolling back to those iconic games that made the company, you know, from the beginning, essentially, the Warcraft developers, the Starcraft developers, the illustrators, the storyboard guys, all the sort of top talent, at least from my perspective, has left the company. So from here, the question is, can they get that talent back into the company? Can they change the culture? Or will that culture sort of spread into Microsoft, right? So that is potentially a big risk for them. Big losers, you know, outside of the development team that they themselves have lost, and, you know, keep in mind they've lost those development team, I think the last guy left about 6 months ago. So it's nothing sort of new, which could potentially be why the price was so discounted, because a lot of the top-tier talent that was developing and creating these games no longer around, right? So all they really have is the titles that they already have, and they need to continue to support those titles. I don't really see that there are too very many losers in this equation, really. Yes, Sony might come under a little bit of pressure. People might sort of migrate. But, you know, Blizzard Activision games weren't really a rival to Sony to start off with, because they're different categories. Blizzard Activision is primarily PC games rather than console. So if anything, it's a good synergy that could potentially, you know, cause a bit of pain. But at the end of the day, all it's going to do is it's going to help Microsoft expand their sort of market share in the gaming industry, and they're not encroaching on someone else's turf, because they just bought the people whose turf, you know, that they'll be encroaching on.
What does this mean, Jay, for the metaverse, which is another big theme that really came into its own last year with Facebook rebranding as Meta and everything now being geared towards this online virtual experience? And clearly gaming is going to be at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think gaming really is the metaverse. You know, as much as Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook like to say, oh, we're going to control the metaverse, really, you look at something like Fortnite, which is an immersive environment where people come together and communicate with each other and spend quality time within the games. So I think that's really going to be the model upon which whatever the metaverse winds up being is going to grow out of. And I think we've already seen that defined. You know, movies like Ready Player One is a great example of showing what they had called the Oasis of what the potential is from a sci-fi perspective of how the metaverse will work, you know, and how we interact with each other. I personally don't buy it, but it's certainly an interesting vision.
So Leo, I think the bottom line question for investors is, how do they get access to this booming industry that is rapidly moving up, you know, the margin curve, and is clearly one of the big drivers for the underlying in Tencent, for example, and as we know, the big driver in our market, NASPAS and Prosus. What is the best angle and route in? Is it to go further down the value chain into maybe chips and the hardware, or is it to go straight to the game developers? How are you accessing this theme?
Yes, Michael, there are many ways to access this theme. So although Activision now will soon no longer be directly accessible, in the States, we still have the two other big publishers, Electronic Arts and Take-Two Interactive. In the East, as you say, we've got Tencent, which is a huge driver of gaming globally. And we've got NetEase, which is a bit more under the radar, but which is also a very high margin, profitable gaming business. I think some smaller and perhaps more higher growth potential plays could be the likes of Roblox and Unity. So Roblox, as we mentioned, the metaverse earlier, that's a company that's really trying to build, I suppose, their own version of the metaverse. And then Unity is a picks and shovels way to play the gaming industry. So they supply a lot of the software that these studios use to actually produce their games. If you look over the past couple of years, particularly in 2021, after the very strong 2020 that the industry had, last year was a bit of a challenge, given that it was quite a hard year-over-year base comparison. So earnings growth was a bit more difficult to come by. And if you look at stock prices, they came under pressure last year. Activision, I suppose, was more for their internal issues. But valuations relative to the rest of the, let's say the S&P 500, for example, are not overly demanding. So I think that you do have quite a few options to choose from if you were to look, for example, in the US.
Michael, can I just jump in there for a second? Yeah. You know, it's an interesting point. You asked before about who the losers were from the deal. I'd like to look at it in terms of who the winners are and from an investment perspective. And really, I think it is the local South African game industry. So we have players like Sea Monster, for example, Renderheads, and of course, Carry First, who just closed a $20 million funding round last week. From people like Andreessen Horowitz in the US and Google at probably, we believe, over $100 million valuation. This is being validated through big deals like the Activision one. Yeah. And so a lot more interest is coming now into the African gaming industry and a lot of investment is there. And so I think that would be the way I would suggest people access it is by looking locally at some of the great players that are coming up on the industry.
It comes back to what you were saying earlier about Netflix being nothing without the content. And what Netflix has been doing and very good at doing is signing deals with local content creators to make its offering relevant to local markets. And you've got to have local game developers to exploit that opportunity in Africa. How do you see this playing out, Pietri, in South Africa and in Africa, in this very nascent market, but one that is clearly a very high growth potential market? Do you see the esports element as one of the key drivers here of the future of the gaming industry?
Yeah, I sort of do. I mean, the Rage Festival, I'm not sure what it's called, convention that they usually have once a year, hasn't been had for a while, thank you to COVID. But there are some... You know, there are some world-class esports teams in South Africa. If you take Bravado Gaming, for example, you know, they compete internationally against some of the world's best teams, right? And they play Call of Duty and a couple of other games. They also, you know, have a couple of streamers on the payroll kind of thing that, kind, you know, they're expected, or they stream essentially 3 to 5 times a week. And they play video games and they promote their team. And that, you know, the esports team, for example, is growing. It's doing well. When you compete, you win money. So it's very much like a sports team, right? So yes, there is a growing interest in gaming in South Africa. And I think that, you know, we are unfortunately on a very difficult to find spot of the earth, and we don't have some of the better servers here, for example. So latency is sometimes a bit of a problem. But there is a growing industry, and with the likes of, you know, teams like Bravado Gaming, for example, who are going out there and placing well in international esports competitions, that does definitely focus, you know, some attention on us, and that brings further investment into servers locally that we can, you know, host games with lower latency and sort of lift the skill floor of the players in our country. Yeah. So overall, I think that we do stand to benefit. I think that it's a very fast-growing industry, right? The question or the challenges that we have is obviously access to computers, access to the internet, that type of stuff. But as time goes by, computers get cheaper, internet access gets faster and easier to get access to. So, the future is exciting.
Absolutely. Speak to anyone who plays Fortnite or any of those games, and ping becomes a big issue if you're playing here in South Africa versus players in Europe. And Jay, just as we end off, we've got a couple of minutes to go. Just share a little bit about the work that you're doing in Kenya and what attracted you to the East African market, which really has become a hub for entrepreneurs and for tech entrepreneurs in particular. What are you working on in the gaming space in Africa?
Yeah, so I lived for 13 years in Singapore and watched the massive transformation that Singapore went through in the mid-90s and early 2000s and that boom. And I saw the exact same thing happening here in Nairobi, and that's why I chose to sell everything and move my family to Kenya. It is an exciting, exciting time to be here. I apologize for the noise that's happening in the background. Some will call it noise, but...
No, it's local. It adds to the ambience. Absolutely. And obviously the excitement.
Never do an interview at 1 p.m. local time. So... But no, everything is really happening here. There's a ton of excitement. We held a blockchain event for women engineers last Friday night. We had 150 women come out for the event to learn about how to get into blockchain, the blockchain industry and technology. There's so much happening here and so much interest and excitement. We as a company are a social impact game developer. We're focused very much on what we call gaming for good. And I think there's a real opportunity as we start to craft the gaming industry in Africa this clean sheet of paper to create it in our own image, you know, and in Africa to make that social impact a piece of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add on to that, it's a call, clearly, a call to arms for game developers, for local skills to be developed through pipelines. I see Wits offering a fantastic degree in gaming, taking you all through the content creation, storyboard, coding, developing process, and a very exciting time to be in the gaming industry here in Africa. That was Jay Shapiro, gaming entrepreneur, live from Kenya, as you heard, who's joined by Pietri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenya Capital, and Salehe Tatsi of Anchor, talking about the recent Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal. Just a cool trillion rand and some change, and just showing you how much activity there is in the gaming market at the moment. You're watching Business Watch.
This show was brought to you by Nedbank Business Banking. Wouldn't you rather have a bank that puts the partner back into partnership? Search Nedbank Bigger Picture Business Banking.